Oh, gracious God, on this day we need to hear once more your forgotten song of love and justice and mercy and hope. Bring our lives resilience and strength. For it's in the name of Christ that we pray. Amen. So some of you know that after church last Sunday, I had the privilege of flying down to Louisville, Kentucky, and then driving about another 3 hours to a little place called Barberville, and landed at Union College, where our ASP team was. And I got to hang out with the group all week and visit around all of the different work sites. I love going to work camp in the summer. It's been part of my tradition, part of what I do for the last 30 years, and it's just one of my favorite weeks of the summer. So you can count on great people. We had a great team this year, 75 youth and adults who were part of it. And we were on Union College, Little Methodist College, sort of spread out. We had to walk a long way to get out of the cafeteria, a long way to get to the cars. Reverend Lee loved that part. But we slept in such great accommodations. The guys got to sleep in a really warm gym. Is that fair to say? Oh, okay, it was a hot gym. And the ladies got to sleep in air conditioning. I don't know how that worked out. But it was we were there on 4th of July, and so some of our team decided to dress like the American flag that day. We had all kinds of patriotic colors flying in the community as they went out to work that morning. And work camp would not be work camp unless you have some late-night games going on. And this is a particularly ferocious, this might be the most full-bodied game of spoons I've ever seen. Bodies were literally flying and elbows and all kinds of things. And it was a lot of fun to watch, not to participate in. Here we have one of our youth just being a little bit silly. This is Mitch. His pants hiked up almost to his armpits, just being a little bit silly. Here we have some of our adults being just a little bit silly. I'm convinced that one of the reasons these men like to go away is they get to dance and sing and do stuff that they're not allowed to do in their normal lives back here. So you might recognize some familiar faces there. There were some pranks. So Rick Callahan woke up one day to find out that his truck had been entirely wrapped in Saran and painted pink. So it was the work of one of the other teams. I think they had pranked the day before. This is one of my favorite moments of the whole. Lee has just thrown a hatchet at a target. And she looks pretty serious about it, doesn't she? She threw with more ferocity and accuracy than any pastor should ever have. And I wish I had the next picture, because the next picture, after it hit and stuck on the target, she's going, yes, like this, her moment of glory. Not many of us were able to actually to hit the target or have it stick on the target, so that was, I'm sure, one of her highlights of her ministry ever. Now, work camp is also all about, ASP is also about work, and lots of good, hard work on these, and sometimes very difficult and challenging conditions. And so you have people who are trying to mend holes in wherever they are, and they're all over the place. And you have people who have to climb under houses. This is Eric Robinson before. It's the house they had to climb under where they're thinking they're going to have to replace a beam. And this particular floor, or lack of floor, they ripped up the floor because they were getting to these joists, and so they could rip out the joists. They had all rotted away. It was at the home of Earl, and I'll tell you a little bit more about Earl, but Earl's the guy that you see on the cover of our bulletin today. And so sort of messy, hard work that they're doing. This team, Dave Robinson's team, they had to build the ramp that never ended. This ramp had 8 turns to get from this low spot all the way up to the top of the hill where this woman was living. She had not been out of her house in 4 months and only been out of her house once in the last 8 months, she was telling me. So this ramp will literally be life for her when she has a chance to get some mobility and get to her car and get out again. So it's always a bit sobering. You know, it's life-giving to be part of that and the energy of the youth and to see the good work that they're doing, but it's also sobering, some of the realities that you encounter along the way. This is long-term generational poverty that you come up against in Appalachia. One Wednesday night, we had been invited into a prayer exercise by the staff, and we were walking around praying at different places that have been marked. And they've been marked with readings, some of them from Scripture, some of them quotes that you were called to reflect on and then offer a prayer. And there were some really powerful things that certainly got your attention. One of the things that got my attention the most were simply some statistics about the area in which we were working. And I want to share a couple of those with you. We were called to prayer by these kind of numbers, the sober realities of their lives. The education levels in Knox County, in Kentucky, where we were, across the country, about 90% of people graduate from high school now. It's pretty high in our country overall. In Severna Park, my guess is about 98%, 99%. It's really high. Not many people don't get through high school here. But in Knox County, it's about 66%, which means at a very early stage of life, there are limited opportunities for some people because they just don't have education to move on. College, which we sort of take for granted, we expect most of our young people here in this church are going to go to college and go on to college. That's sort of the norm, the expectation. Across the country, that's not always the case. 30% of us across the country are college educated, have graduated with a four-year degree. And in Knox County, it's much lower than that, 10%. 10%. So it's a very different life situation. The numbers on poverty are really sobering as well. Overall, the poverty rate in this country, people who live at what the government has called the poverty rate, and you could extreme poverty, and you could argue that that number is probably too low. It probably needs to even be a little higher than it is. But 15% across the country, that's too many people. But in Knox County, that number is 32%. And here's the even more alarming figure. Across the country, there are about 21% of children in this country live in poverty. In Knox County, it's 48%. 48%. So our kids are with these wonderful, darling kids at their work sites, and they're playing, and they're having fun. 48% of those kids in that county are living at the poverty level or below. Very sobering. And what I find year after year, going to all of these different places as I've traveled with youth and with adults all over the country and really all over the world, is that people in those circumstances still have choices and still have options. And do they choose to just sort of live in bitterness and despair? And I've seen that. Or do they see what is possible still? And do they live with resilience and hope? And I continue to be humbled by the people I meet who are living economically by very fragile circumstances and yet live with such resilience and hope. And Earl was one of those people that I met this time. Earl has had a hard life. You can see it in his face, right? He has lived a hard life. And Earl was so proud of what he had done to his property that when I arrived there to take pictures of our team, he grabbed my arm, literally, and he took me around the edge of his property to show me all the ways he'd been fighting back the water. You see, not only did he live in a really low-lying piece of property, oftentimes those who are poorest have the worst pieces of property, right? Because that's what they get. They get the leftovers. And so he's in this place that's surrounded by creeks on both sides, and it's been made worse by the strip mine up the hill, whose lake has now overflowed, and now there's other water that rushes onto his property. And you saw that floor being ripped up. That's because water that had run under the house and had come up into the floor, into the joists. But he was working hard, not just with our volunteers. He was working hard side by side with them. But he'd been working for a long time to make his own property better. He was resilient. And so he was channeling water away this way, and he was channeling water away this way. And he sort of diverted the water away from the house, and he was so proud of it. He said, "See, it rained hard here last night, but it's kind of dry in the yard over here." And he even showed me this area that he built up in the back where he now had planted a garden. And he was so proud of his potatoes and his squash and his cucumbers and his tomatoes that he was growing out there. And he was so proud. He showed this tour lasted about 40 minutes around his property. And he was just telling stories the whole time about his life and about what he was doing to survive and to be resilient. And I am forever humbled by people like Earl and his woman, as he called her. I didn't know if she was a wife or his woman. They've been together for 47 years, he and June, a very sweet woman. And the two of them talked with me for a while about this life that they are crafting out in hope and resilience, even in very difficult circumstances. The song that Christine just sang for us as the character, the main character in this play, is singing about a drought in the land. And there's not been water in a long time. There's not been rain in a long time. And so it's both actuality and it's also metaphor. Well, can my song somehow renew the earth? This is what I can bring. I can bring this song. Oh, flower growing from a bed of stone, from what strange nation have you flown? Oh, flower bursting from the death-dry dust, we must have spring this year. We must. And so she sings her song into that dryness, into that barren landscape, a song of hope and resilience. The Apostle Paul was no stranger to difficult circumstances. He often talks about his own circumstances, talks about the circumstances facing the churches that he had helped found and then that he helped nurture along the way on their spiritual journeys. And in this letter to the Corinthians, the second letter to the Corinthians, in the fourth chapter, he says, we are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not even driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. What he's saying is that even though we have found ourselves in those circumstances, because of the enduring power of God, because of the enduring presence of the risen Christ in us, the one who has died, yes, but the one who has risen and the one who causes us to rise, we will not be defeated. We will not be broken. We will find a way to move on and be resilient in hope. It's a week, as a nation, that we've needed that, haven't we? It's been a soul-wearying week. Scenes of death and scenes of sadness and tragedy all over our nation. As we've mourned the lives of young, lost lives of African Americans, as well as police officers. And here's the thing, even in Dallas, where those officers were struck down, there was a peaceful protest going. A peaceful protest where literally officers and protesters were taking selfies together. They were, you know, pouring out their hearts, but they were also doing it respectfully and in love. And one person who's so driven by anger and violence made his way up to a high place with a high-powered rifle and began shooting down officers. And so we mourn that deep division. But we also mourn the brokenness that gets us to a place like this. And we mourn the discussion about race in our country and about justice for all God's children. And in the middle of that, there have been all kinds of commentaries and all kinds of postings on Facebook and all over the internet. I have been heartened by some of the words of friends who have posted things like this. Be soft. Do not let the world make you hard. Do not let pain make you hate. Do not let bitterness steal your sweetness. Do not let pain make you hate. We need to be encouraged and reminded of words like that in a week like we've just been through. How do we find our way forward? We hold on to a God of resilience and a God of hope who has a different vision for how we might live together. Came across a story this week, a story of resilience and moving on in the face of great pain, of rising, even when she was not ready, unready. It's a story of Neshama Franklin, and she told her story on the Moth Radio Hour. Some of you know that resource and the Moth Radio gatherings that are held all over this country. It's real-life people just telling their stories. And some of these stories are heartbreaking, and some will make you laugh, and some will make you cry. And in a shameless case, she's talking about moving on through a very difficult stage of her life. She had lost her husband of 35 years. They'd been together, they'd built this life together, and now in the months afterwards, she was just starting to heal. Her sister had planned a trip for them to the Grand Canyon. They were going to raft down the Colorado River, something her husband would have loved to have done, and she was doing it in his memory, but also doing it as a way to remind herself that she was fully alive, and she would get through this. The only problem was that she developed a cold, what she thought was just a cold, right before the trip, and it turned out to be this severe bronchitis. So several days into the trip, she is just really struggling. And when you're down at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, they don't have a Rite Aid or a CVS, so you just go get some antibiotics. And so she is really struggling. Her sister was caring for her, and she gave her what she called Italian penicillin, garlic plants. Which is known to have some medicinal qualities. And she would literally just hang on for dear life as they would make their way down a stretch of the river and then just sort of pull herself out of the raft and go lie down because she was feeling so miserable. All the other people were going off and doing these hikes and things like that, and she was just barely surviving. And on one of the lowest days, she sort of made the connection that she was not just sick in body, she was sick with grief. Her husband had died with lung cancer, and here she was struggling to breathe. And she just allowed herself to feel all the pain, to feel all of the loss, and to feel all that she was going through. And then the next day, she started to feel a little better. And the next day, and that thanks, as she called it, thanks to that Italian penicillin, she started to regain her strength, but also to thanks to the fact that she was allowing God to renew her spirit. And then she writes this. They were also there on another mission. They were there to spread her husband's ashes. And they had picked out the place, and when they finally came to that place, she said, "I imagine the ashes would swirl and mix and go down the Colorado. But anyone who knows anything about ashes knows this doesn't happen, especially when there's a wind. So I dumped out the bag, and the ashes blew right back and coated me. I was covered with John. All I could do was dunk and weep, and you should know I will not readily cry. And when I'd washed him off to the best of my ability, I hiked back down to where the rest of the group was, where they were going down the little Colorado, this little offshoot. I put on my life jacket upside down like a diaper. That's how you protect your rump from the rocks on the bottom. I stuck my feet out, and I floated down the little Colorado 3 times. And when I crawled out of the stream the last time, a guide looked at me and said, "Nashema, what's going on?" I never saw such a beatific expression on anyone going down the little Colorado. And she said, "I was traveling with my husband, John, and I was learning to let him go. I was traveling with my husband, John, and I was learning to let him go." She'd reached this point of pain, and literally, she was starting to find new life and rise again in the middle of that. "I was traveling with my husband, John, and I was letting him go." Nelson Mandela said, "The greatest glory in living lies not in never falling, but in rising every time we fall." The reality, friends, is that we are fragile and we are broken creatures, and we will fall many times, sometimes by our own doing and sometimes just by the circumstances of life. We will go through divorces, we will go through deaths, we will lose jobs, we will find ourselves backed into a corner and not knowing a way out. We will all fall. Power is knowing that God is with us and beside us and within us as a strength that we cannot claim as our own, but only God doing it through us, a chance to rise every time we fall. The song that Christine's about to sing for us, "Unready and Rising," it's my sermon title today, goes like this. The sun glows above, the path gleams ahead. Here I am. Unready and rising, aware of a love transforming my dread. Here I am, unready and rising, no longer afraid to know my vision's complete and sure that a grace I cannot see will guide my feet. Alarmed but alive, I will not retreat. Here I am, unready and rising. Or in the words of the Apostle Paul, from that second chapter, or the second letter to the Corinthians. We now have this light shining in our hearts, but we ourselves are like fragile clay jars containing this great treasure. This makes it clear that our great power is from God and not from ourselves. God, who offers us hope and resilience, even in a week like this, even when we feel like we are at our lowest point, Even when we are unready, we have a God who is all about the rising. All about the rising. This Jesus who overcame death, and this Jesus whose new life lives in all of us, if we'd let it. Resilience and hope, unready and rising.